When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
This is the Training Camp Report with Tom Opperman and Bob Labriola on Steelers Nation Radio.
Labs, did you ever think you would live to see the day that 14,000 people would show up to witness a practice? To quote the great Allen Iverson, we're not talking about a game. We're not talking about the actual game here. We're talking about a practice, Labs. 14K, a record for Friday Night Lights.
Yeah, I mean, it hasn't happened for 3 years because last year was rained out. And then the two previous years, there was no training camp in Latrobe because of the pandemic. So I don't know, maybe the people up here, were just missing it, jonesing for a night practice. Because I'll tell you what, when, the buses left here about 6:30, okay? So you're winding your way through Latrobe, and two things struck me. It was unbelievable. Okay, we got closer, you're driving past, and the streets are lined with cars, okay? And we're riding in the school buses, and I'm just like looking out the windows. Beyond the people who were coming out of their houses and stuff, waving and shooting video off their cell phones and, screaming and all that stuff, okay? I was looking at the license plates on the cars. I mean, at one point on the street, I counted 8 straight out-of-state license plates parked. I mean, so, it's we can say that, Westmoreland County loves the Steelers, and that's probably very true. But I don't know that, it was all Westmoreland County there last night either. This proves to me at least, or offers definitive proof anyway, that people plan their vacations around this. Because how else are, Wisconsin and Virginia, and there were some Kansas.
Let's just hope they're planning vacations around it. I don't want them to be driving from Kansas to see a 2-hour practice and then going back home. Let's do a little extra stuff while you're up here.
I'll tell you, I don't know that, I wouldn't have driven from the dorm and then the other thing that was unbelievable was when you got in close enough to see inside the stadium, it was packed. They were lined up 6 deep around the behind the fence, and the screaming, and it was seriously. God love them. I mean it. I don't get it. As you said, you quoted the great Allen Iverson, and maybe I'm jaded because I've been doing this for many, many years, and it is just another practice and all that stuff that you said. But to a lot of people, it's way more than that, and they were all at Latrobe Stadium last night.
Yeah, it's so special for the fans, but it's also so special for the players. Max Starks joined us on the Mark Madden Show, the show I usually produce on Friday, and we talked a bit about Friday Night Lights, and he was saying, I know it's not 60,000 plus that you get in NFL stadiums on a Sunday, but it's as close as a simulation you can get to a game-like atmosphere during this training camp setting. It helps you adjust to, the moving parts that a season presents. You're not always playing on the same day at the same time. You got a Monday night game, you got a Thursday night game. Sometimes you're at a Wednesday night game because of COVID. You have to be able to adapt on the fly, and this kind of teaches you how to do that as well. So not just from the fan perspective, it's a great time for them, of course, but the players all genuinely love it. It gives them that feeling of being back in high school.
Yeah, and, I keep going back to the scene because the scene to me is, really special and unique. And I'm not a player, never have been, so I'll let Max speak to, that end of it. But one of the things, so we're there and it's 7:30, 8 o'clock, whatever it is, and standing there watching practice, and all of a sudden you can smell the funnel cakes. seriously. And I'm thinking,
you're like that cartoon where the person smells the pie on the windowsill and you just start floating towards it.
And I'm looking around thinking, where is this? Where is this booth or, you know, pop up or wherever they're making these? Because, oh my God, does this smell spectacular? But yeah, it was just a lot of little things like that that are out of the ordinary, unique to this event. And again, as I said, wow. Now, they didn't have the club seats, though. I've talked about that before. You know, the chairs lined up on the other side. The other side of the, you know, you go to a high school game, all right? And as I've said, to describe this scene, the home side of the high school field is, the bleachers are higher and there's a press box up there. On the visitor's side, the bleachers are very low, maybe 7-8 rows high, maybe 10. I don't know. I didn't count. And you, how many high school games do you ever go to where the other side is filled? I mean, and how many high school games do you ever go to where the other side is filled maybe an hour or two before anything starts? So, excuse me. The scene to me is what always attracts a lot of my attention and never ceases to amaze me.
No, and it's an opportunity for some players to, you know, make a splash under the bright lights in front of a big crowd. And I'm sure people showed up thinking, oh, you know, I get to see George Pickens make that amazing sideline catch over Joey Porter Jr. in person. Maybe I'll see Deontay Johnson do something crazy. Oh, some of the new guys, Darnell Washington, maybe he'll bowl somebody over. Did you have Kendrick Green on your bingo card as the guy who would emerge as the big crowd pleaser touring Friday Night Lights last night? Because he was the star, Labs.
Yeah, I mean, I had heard some things, you know, mid to late afternoon about what they were going to try and do and some of the things that were in the offing. And, you know, and I'm kind of ashamed to admit this, but, you know, hey, if I can't make fun of myself, who can? That was not Kendrick Green's first time doing that. Apparently that has happened here on campus once. And I never noticed it. I just didn't. Obviously no one else did because those practices are open and therefore, you know, any of the media attending can report anything that they see. And I don't remember seeing any of that.
Remember seeing any reports.
So, you know, and I was told that they liked a little bit of what they saw the first time and they were going to go, you know, and do it again. And so, you know, I was watching for it. And, you know, you talk about making an impact. Kendrick Green makes an impact and he is pretty nimble and mobile. You know, and we were talking about Friday Night Lights, the movie and the TV show and all that. Okay. Another great movie about high school football is Remember the Titans. That's one of my favorites. And the way they described this one player on defense, agile, mobile, and hostile. And that's that's what I thought of, those three words, because there may be some things he's not. In the middle of the line of scrimmage, you know, maybe he's not big enough to handle nose tackles or, you know, whatever that is. But he is, as I said, he has some mobility. He is good on his feet. He can find people on the move. And he knows how to find them and make contact. And there were a couple. The one hit that he had on the linebacker in Duque, it was a running play. And Kendrick Green was in the backfield, and he didn't lead up necessarily through the hole. It wasn't like an I formation thing, but it was kind of a off tackle where, you know, he kicked out the linebacker who came in free. Maybe it was a trap play. I don't know. I'm not an expert at any of that either. But the hit that he, wow, you could hear that. I mean, if you weren't paying attention, the noise brought your head up. That's how loud it was. I don't know if that's going to be a regular part of the offense. I don't even know that Kendrick Green's going to make the team. I don't know any of that stuff right now. But I'm telling you what, if well, I guess they can't have film of it because you're not allowed to video at that point part of
practice. We don't want to give Belichick any extra advantages here. Don't want anything he can hack into.
That's an awfully cynical viewpoint, don't you think?
I'm sure you share it.
Absolutely. But, I mean, if I'm on another team and I see him in there, I'm not crossing that line of scrimmage that aggressively. I'm just not. Because, wow, as I said, if you weren't paying attention, if your head was down or if you were eating your funnel cake or whatever you might have been doing instead of watching the field, that sound pops your head right up. I mean, it was, wow, it echoed.
Yeah, well, Kendrick Green spoke about it following Friday night's practice, and he said, you know, it's just something that we're dabbling with, and he said, I don't think it is going to be anything too serious going forward, but we'll see. So he's not going to become, you know, the Steelers' version of Patrick Ricard for the Ravens, the 300-pound fullback in the backfield, although Kendrick Green did play some fullback in practice to prepare the Steelers for Patrick Ricard, but you know, the Steelers don't waste their time with stuff like this. This might not ever happen on a field during an actual game, but they're experimenting with it for a reason. It's not just, oh, wouldn't it be so fun if we had Kendrick Green in the backfield? Don't you think the crowd would love that? No, there's legitimate method to the madness here.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, there aren't any fullbacks on the roster. You know, Monty Pattenbaum retired. Right. Derek Watt is still an unrestricted free agent. You know, Connor Hayward dabbles. I mean, he can play a lot of different positions. You know, he could very well play the position, but, I mean, he's not a fullback. And so maybe this is, you know, some kind of effort to manufacture one without using a roster spot for one specifically, because while, you know, Kendrick Green is dabbling as a fullback, he also is still the number two center. So when, you know, the second team offensive line goes out, he's the center. So there's that too. So, you know, again, we've talked a lot about this where coaches are looking for and how they might be able to, you know, save a roster spot with some individual's position and versatility. So, you know, who knows? Maybe this is part of that plan. Again, as I said, I don't know that Kendrick Green's a lock for the 53-man roster, but I'll tell you what he's showing right now is making him a far more attractive candidate, I think, than he was when training camp opened. So, you know, the more he can do, as Chuck Noll always said, and Kendrick Green was doing last night. And as I said, it was practice can get mundane. You know, it just can. But that certainly perked me up. And I started, you know, because I was looking for him, you know, because as I right. said, I kind of got a little
you
tip.
You got the tip off.
This, yeah. So anytime they were in 11 on 11, you know, I'm looking. There he is. And he did not disappoint.
Well, this is normally the time during our training camp report that we would hear from Coach Tomlin and his thoughts following practice. Tomlin was not at Friday Night Lights last night, though. He was in Canton, Ohio for Friday night's Gold Jacket Dinner with inductee Rondae Barber. Tomlin coached Barber while he was the Tampa Bay Buccaneers defensive backs coach. And some Steeler fans might not know, there's two Super Bowl rings clanging around Mike Tomlin's pocket. He won one with that Tampa team on that staff. And I wanted to play this soundbite for you, Labs, and then we can discuss it. It's a quick little, you know, question that Rondae Barber was asked during the Hall of Fame game about the impact that Mike Tomlin has, and I just think it really illustrates how Tomlin is not only viewed here but around the league.
2001 is his first year at Tampa. I was a free agent that year, actually, and I'd stayed, and it was first time defensive back coach for me after Herm left, and I led the league in interceptions. His influence on me is without words. I mean, he transformed me into the player that is now standing here in Canton getting ready to get a gold jacket. There's a lot of ways for me to describe it, but the reality is he empowered me. He told me what I could be, and he went about methodically making me that guy. And here I am. I love him to death. We're best friends still to this day.
No one in Pittsburgh is surprised to hear words like that come from Rondae's mouth referring to Coach Tomlin, but for a player going into the Hall of Fame to really credit Coach T with a lot of making him the player that he was today. He said first year that Coach got there, he led the league in interceptions, and he helped mold him into the Hall of Famer that he is today. I mean, that's just high praise that doesn't get thrown around lightly.
No, and I mean, I'm sure that it also included more than just X's and O's. I mean, because, you know, Mike Tomlin is very good at, you know, that kind of motivational thing, or, you know, the things that we refer to as Mike Tomlinisms. You know, they have a lot of meaning to them, you know, beyond just clever little phrases. And one of my favorites is, Mike Tomlin has told players, "I know what you're capable of, but what are you willing to do?"
It's a classic.
Now, you think about that, you know, if you're a player, you know, that's, especially in the NFL, you know, when you get to this level of the sport, everybody's good. Everybody's good. But, you know, a lot of times the difference is, you know, what's in your heart. And, you know, Kevin Colbert always said that in the talent or player evaluation process, the two most difficult things to evaluate in someone are hearts and smarts. And, you know, again, that's one of those, you know, rhymes and, oh, isn't that nice? You stitch it on a pillow,
Dr.
or whatever.
Seuss,
yeah. Right. But I mean, you know, you think about that for a minute, and yeah, their intelligence and what they're willing to do is what makes, you know, is the difference between Rondé Barber wearing a gold jacket and maybe, you know, having a mediocre career, no Super Bowl ring on his finger. And, you know, he's not in Canton this weekend. So, you know, recognizing that in an individual and then tapping into it with an individual, you know, somehow relating to him on a level where that individual thinks about that and it resonates with him, and then he acts upon it. You know, that's what a coach is. So, yeah, you know, Mike Tomlin is pretty good at his job, and you know, apparently he was pretty good at his job early on
right
in his
away,
career.
Apparently.
And you know, you can also see a little bit, you know, from what Rondé Barber was saying, because this was what, 2001, the Steelers hired him in 2007. So even that 6-year span, I'm sure he had some time, and it actually happened where he refined, you know, a lot of his methods and techniques and those kinds of things in some of those areas. And you can see why the Rooneys were impressed with him. And he kind of, I don't know, at least in my mind, kind of came out of nowhere. You know, when Bill Cowher announced his decision to step away, you know, the candidates seemed to me to be Russ Grimm and Ken Wisenhunt. I mean, there were two guys on your staff, both very instrumental in the success of the Steelers team in that era, the early 2000s, early to mid 2000s. And you think, well, you know, those would be, either one of those guys would be a pretty good candidate. But, you know, the Steelers went a little off the board and brought in someone from the outside. And, you know, I think that to a lot of people, I'm sure it was, you know, who's this guy? Because even when he was in Tampa, he may have been doing great work. Obviously he was. But he wasn't a household name, Mike Tomlin. And, you know, his 1 year as a coordinator in Minnesota, it wasn't like the Vikings had great success that season.
They weren't the second coming of the Purple People Eaters.
They were not. You know, like I said, it could have come across as a surprise for people who are not studying the league. And, again, you know, we're going back to what made Dan Rooney, Dan Rooney, his ability to recognize this, you know, see around the corner, so to speak, and get to know this guy and bring him more into the mainstream in terms of the candidates for the job. That's why he's got a gold jacket too.
Yeah. And, you know, hearing Rondé speak about Tomlin that way, it comes as no surprise as how he's never had a Steelers team quit on him in his entire tenure here. You know, you could start 2-6, start slow. They always rally. They always finish above 500 or at 500 under Coach Tomlin. And some of the things that Rondé said in that soundbite kind of translate into me understanding why that's the case. You know, you might be 2-6, but Coach Tomlin comes into that building with a 6-2 attitude, and that can go a long way when you're dealing with, you know, professionals here. You know, it's not like college where you can just go in and light a fire and just scream at them. You have to hit the buttons in the right way, and he's a master at that.
Yeah, and I do believe that there's, I won't say cynicism, but there's a feeling among professionals where, you know, they're not going to be BS'd. I mean, right. Not for long anyway. I have a lot of respect for Mike Tomlin, really, professionally. And what I know of him as a man, I don't want to claim that we're pals because, you know, that's way overstating it. But, you know, we converse and, you know, those kinds of things. And I love the guy professionally and from what I know of him personally. So I'm a big fan, too.
Coach T will be back at practice today after taking a hiatus yesterday to join Rondae Barber in Canton for the Gold Jacket dinner. When we come back, we're going to talk about 7 shots. The offense has been mired in a losing streak. Did that come to an end under the lights last night? We'll discuss that, and we'll hear from Deontay Johnson next on the Training Camp Report on Steelers Nation Radio.
This is the Training Camp Report with Tom Opperman and Bob Labriola on Steelers Nation Radio.
7 shots is one of the more popular drills done during Steelers training camp, and the defense had been dominating. They had won 5 straight leading into Friday Night Lights practice last night, Labs. I don't know if the offense was listening to our training camp report yesterday when we said, you know, enough's enough already. You got to start winning this drill. I don't know if it was the bright lights of Latrobe Memorial Stadium and the 14,000 on hand. Whatever it was, though, they finally got off the schneid. The offense gets a 5-2 victory in 7 shots. Well done, offense. Way to finally come through and get that good dinner.
Well, I was just going to say, you know, it's funny that you closed with that because I did some, you know, extra digging into that. And that's something that I was told is going to be re-implemented in this next phase of training camp. But to this point, it had not been in effect. And
well, that's why the offense was losing then, right? There's no carrot out in front.
You know, there's no carrot. Then why was the defense winning? That hasn't been the thing. I mean, there's no apparently the kitchen crew has not been, you know, opening cans of baked beans and making, you know, Franks and beans for the losers of 7 shots. But yes, everything else you said was accurate. The defense had won 5 in a row, and the offense did put together, I think, its most complete performance in that drill since the first day that they had it this summer. And you know, let me just say this too. This isn't necessarily strictly related to 7 shots, but we've talked a lot about, you know, George Pickens this training camp in terms of, you know, the receivers and what he's been able to do. Calvin Austin had, I think, his best practice last night. His hands were very sure. He was running crisp routes. There were a couple of plays. Again, this is I'm going off a little bit on the subject because we're supposed to be talking about 7 shots. But he ran very crisp routes. He had very sure hands. He was making plays down the field in some situations that I'm sure the Steelers were heartened by. Because, you know, this is a guy who, you know, we know about Pickens. We know about Deontay Johnson. We've already seen a lot of good things from Allen Robinson. With receivers, you know, 3 isn't enough. You need a 4th, not necessarily that you're going to play 4 at the same time, but you got to have a 4th. And was that guy Calvin Austin? Who might that guy, if it's not him, be? You know, those kinds of questions or issues to be resolved. I think that last night, Calvin Austin showed to me definitively anyway that he is capable and very possibly ready to assume the kind of role that the Steelers need him to assume for this wide receiving core, and by extension, the offense, to be the kind of unit that, you know, you need to, you know, get through an NFL regular season. Okay, so back to seven shots now. First play of the game, or first play of the drill, it was something that I would call a combination route, and that's something that they've been working on, you know, offense and defense going against each other in the last couple of practices up here on campus. And, you know, you run the routes where the receivers, I don't know, play off each other. Maybe that's the description. They're not always crossing routes, but, you know, you present things to the – and it's two-on-two too, as well. So the defense is also working on dealing with those kinds of routes from the offense. And what it seemed to me to be was an extension of that drill, because Allen Robinson caught the touchdown pass. He and another receiver were running the route against Levi Wallace and Trey Norwood. And I don't know if it was a miscommunication or somebody, you know, you're not allowed to pick. So somebody got rubbed. I love the difference.
Not a pick. You know? It's a rub. Yes.
It's a rub, or whatever it was. But Allen Robinson was wide open. One of the defenders, I won't say blew his coverage, but he wasn't where he was supposed to be. The switch didn't happen the way it should have, or maybe the offense just did it so well that it couldn't have been defended, whatever it is. So 1-0 for the offense on the Allen Robinson pass from Kenny Pickett. Second play was another one of those George Pickens great catches in the back of the end zone, but the official threw the flag and it was illegal touching. Okay, so by that, what causes that is Pickens apparently stepped on the line or out of bounds, then got back in bounds and was the first person to touch the ball after that. So that's illegal, so even though he made the great catch and his feet were both in bounds when he made the catch, but he had stepped out of bounds just previously and was the first person to touch the ball after he got back in bounds, and so that's illegal touching. So even though it was a touchdown, it didn't count. The third play, Deontay Johnson was wide open. It was a crosser-type touchdown, or crosser-type route touchdown. The next play, Kenny Pickett rolled to his left, ran the ball, and I've seen still photos of it, and I was there to see it as well. When Pickett ran, when he got to the corner, got to the pylon, you know, remember the Heath Miller play where he put the ball, touched the pylon with the ball? That's a touchdown.
Yes.
That's what Kenny Pickett did. He touched the pylon with the ball, touchdown. So, so then the drill's almost over. It was 3-1. It would have been 4-0, you know, as I mentioned, the illegal touching right thing. But the point I'm trying to make here is the offense was very efficient in its first four snaps, which we really hadn't seen, I don't think at all, at training camp in this particular drill. It was 3-1 at that time. Mitch Trubisky comes in, hits Gunnar Olszewski with a pass where he kind of sat down in an area. But I don't mean literally sat down, but just kind of, you know, got small and got himself in an open area. He got hit by Trubisky, and it was a touchdown. Then again, the guy I was mentioning before, Calvin Austin, caught a pass in the back of the end zone for a touchdown that made it 5-1. And then the seventh play was incomplete. So the final score was 5-2. But as I said, the offense was very, very much better than it had been. Even the cynic that I am was impressed. And good day for the offense. Too bad that it's not, winter eats good in the cafeteria yet, or who knows, maybe that'll start it. No franks and beans for the defense, I guess.
Well, very encouraging signs from the offense to bounce back and get a big performance like that. And also encouraging to see Kenny be very productive in that drill and utilize a lot of his weaponry, targeting three different wide receivers, all of them coming down with the ball. Like you said, George Pickens only stepping out of bounds and committing illegal touching. But Pickens, Robinson, Johnson, Calvin Austin, like you said, those guys have a lot of potential as a unit. And Deontay Johnson caught up with the media before practice yesterday. So talks a little bit about what he's excited for Friday Night Lights. Still all relevant, but then gets into the receiving core and what he's seen so far from camp. Let's take a listen to Steelers wide receiver Deontay Johnson.
To me, it gives me like a home game feeling, just going out there and do what we do, putting on the show for the fans. And it also allows the fans to see the new guys that we brought to the team and just see what they can do. And like I say, just put on the show, really. Ooh, seeing everybody, they're moving a lot faster. It seems like they're picking up the playbook really well. And you see it in their game, and they're getting a lot of reps. They move guys moving up the depth chart a little bit. So they feeling, I don't want to say comfortable, but they getting there. But like I said, you see them getting there, and it makes you happy because you see the older guys leading them and being that mentor that they need whenever they have a question.
Yeah, you guys have had a few days in pads. What do you feel like is going to be the biggest difference in this
season? Starting fast. Last year we had a problem with that, but this year is this year. And you can see it at practice. We moving the ball way better than last year. The chemistry is there with all the guys. And we moving as one unit, and that's what you need. Defense move as one unit, offense move as a unit. So we do that as one, nobody can stop us.
Deontay, did you figure it was about time to make a spectacular play yesterday, that one-handed catch?
Oh, I was just trying to make a play. George made one the other day, so I had to try to make one back. But like I said, I'm happy for George when he makes those catches. All I can do is just keep being me and making plays.
You guys have a little back and forth going with that kind of thing? Or?
Oh, no, it's just one of them feed. Whenever see us make a play, it gets us amped up. I gotta try to do something here, but you know what I'm saying? Not trying to force it, but at the same time, you want to make a play or whatnot. But it's been good, though.
Have you guys been able to have a little bit more contact with the pads? What have you seen out of Joey Porter Jr. on the outside? What's the biggest play so far as a quarterback?
Joey, he's a long corner, fast, physical. He's picking up the playbook real well. I see him moving up the depth chart, running with the twos. He gets in with the ones here and there. So me, I'm just being a mentor to him as well. So if he have any questions with me, and I see him, what he can do better at DB, you know, from a receiver standpoint, I kind of tell him what I see and whatnot. But he's been great, man. I love him. He's getting better every day.
Yeah, and after practice, he's been working with Pat and Ike Taylor. Has been here. Obviously, those guys play the position. But as a wide receiver, what can you add to his development? What kind of advice can you give him from the offensive side?
Really, just if I see him on his heels, like for me, it's a quick speed release. Every time you're going to win because he's not going to be able to open up like he normally just lock his hips or whatever. But I see little stuff like that. I tell him, and once I tell him that he does it, you see a difference in, you know what I'm saying, the next rep. So just little stuff like that.
Deontay, receiving the ball more is different about this
game. Everybody's playing faster, you know, and you can see it on the film. We're playing, even the coach OC said we're playing faster, so, and everybody knows what they're doing. Last year, the timing was off a little bit, and you know, kind of question like if we was going to be in the right spot at the same time, you know what I'm saying? But this year is different. Everybody knows what they're doing, going to be in the right spot. If they change the play, everybody knows their assignment. So that's really the main focus, knowing your assignment and watching the ball, knowing the snap count. Those little things, those small things people don't really talk about, but those play a big part in the offense.
So better prepared.
Yeah, we're way better prepared than last year. So like I said, I'm happy and I'm excited for the season.
Some of that familiarity with Kenny as well?
Yeah, Kenny harps on us about, you know, details. And that's what we focus on, details. We out there communicating with each other, receivers, whether we know the player or not, we talking. So just so we don't have those mental errors or mental mistakes or whatnot. So because we have a paper and they jot down every little thing we do. So we trying to stay off that paper.
Really? Like school? Like yes. They got notes?
Mental errors, false starts, penalties, little stuff like that. Not knowing your assignment, they tally it down. So we trying to stay off that.
So what happens if you're on the list? Do they call you out? How does that work?
The receivers, we got Nah, what is it? We're receiving, we kind of, I would say, push-ups or whatever. So, like, how many drops, mental errors, or whatever. So, little stuff like that. We don't want to do that. So, we try our best not to get on that paper.
DJ, what about Kenny's processing? What about getting the ball out on time to a primary guy? How's that? Is that different from last year?
Yeah, a lot different. Me, my contact situation last year, I didn't get those reps with him. So, me this year, being out there with him, you just getting that time, being out there every day with him, you get those reps. That builds repetition, the chemistry with him, and just him being comfortable with his guys out there and knowing who's going to be out there at all times. Gives him the ability to play free, and us to play free. So, and allow us to do what we do. So,
do you like playing under the lights just to get for one night, just because there are people there, a lot of them haven't seen you, and you receivers like to, you know, kick it up a notch, don't you, when the lights are on?
Yeah, because you want to make those plays, yeah. Get the fans what they're looking for. So, that kind of gets you amped up a little bit. So, it makes you play a little harder. So, and that's my opinion. So, yeah.
Break up the monotony of camp, having that night practice?
Yeah, boy. But camp is tough, but you got to have a real strong mental, you know, to keep going. So just seeing a different scenery, you know, coming to practice starting a little later gives you enough time to catch up on your body and stuff like that. So.
Yeah, so you scored a lot of touchdowns in your career.
Yeah.
Not getting one last year, did that take a while to process, or did you just kind of flush it as a fluke?
It was an odd year, like very weird, you know, not being in the box. It was hard to like really cope with it every week. Like, dang, I wonder if I'm gonna get an end zone this week. I wonder if I'm gonna get it my touches. But now, like, it's like I can't do nothing about it. It happened, so I had to move forward. So I just had to keep playing every week, trying to do my best I can, just to not think about it. But this year I'm ready. So it's past is the past. So. I believe in Kenny going to give me the ball this year. The coach is going to call the plays that we need to call to make that happen.
Steelers wide receiver Deontay Johnson catching up with the media the other day before practice. The rookies have been making a big impact for the Steelers in training camp so far in 2023, but one is flying a little bit under the radar. We're going to discuss him and wrap things up next. You're listening to the Training Camp Report on Steelers Nation Radio.
This is the Training Camp Report with Tom Opperman and Bob Labriola on Steelers Nation Radio.
The 2023 draft class had everybody in Steelers Nation excited, and so far that excitement hasn't waned since seeing them at St. Vincent. They've all pretty much been impressive, and fourth-round pick Nick Herbig is no exception to that, Labs. I was listening to TJ Watt the other day talking to the media, and Herbig came up, and you could tell how impressed Watt was with how, you know, quickly he seems to be picking things up in the NFL level. And it was also nice to hear Watt say that he's an open book. Anything that Nick needs can come up to his fellow Wisconsinite, and he will impart any wisdom that he has on the position. So obviously I love seeing that veteran and rookie relationship start to bloom, but to hear someone of TJ Watt's stature, a defensive player of the year, be impressed with, you know, how fast and how quickly Nick Herbig has come along, that's encouraging for the season, because you need more than just two edge rushers. You need more than just three edge rushers, Labs, if you're going to get the job done.
Yeah, and, you know, the Steelers have a veteran behind TJ Watt and Alex Highsmith and Marcus Golden. He's someone that they added. But I'll be honest with you. I have noticed Nick Herbig flash more than Marcus Golden in practices so far. So, I mean, I don't know what the future holds at that position for those two guys, you know, all of that stuff. But it does seem to me that the Steelers have some significantly more, let me put it that way, significantly more depth, quality depth there, depth they can count on at outside linebacker than they did even as recently as last season. So, you know, that's certainly a good thing. And, you know, Nick Herbig is one of those guys where I think it's still kind of to be determined whether he is utilized strictly as an outside linebacker / edge rusher in the Steelers defense, or if maybe he's more of a, you know, movable chess piece, a wild card kind of thing. I mean, you know, looking at how the defense is developing over the course of this camp, I'm really impressed with, you know, there seem to be a lot of guys who can, you know, play different spots and, you know, present different problems for the opposing offenses. You know, Nick Herbig is one of those guys. And, you know, I've been impressed by him. And as I said, I think it's going to be really interesting to keep an eye on him and watch his further development. And, you know, since we're on the subject of the rookie class, certainly we've talked a lot about Broderick Jones and Joey Porter. Keanu Benton made a play in Thursday's two-minute drill. Even though, you know, the offense capitalized on that specific possession with that pass down the middle to another rookie, Darnell Washington, who we've talked about once or twice. Corey Trice, the unfortunate situation with his knee. He's now on injured reserve. You know, but he was showing some things that made you think that, you know, maybe this guy could, you know, be a developmental piece or, you know, contribute in some way or, you know, certainly looked somewhat exciting for a seventh-round pick. I'm here to tell you that the other seventh-round pick, Spencer Anderson, this offensive lineman, he is opening a lot of eyes too. I mean, this guy is, you know, he's still running third team and all that stuff, but he is versatile. He can play three different positions on the offensive line, center, guard, or tackle. He has played all of those during his college career. And, you know, there's a buzz growing, you know, about this guy, his versatility. He has shown that really none of the things that they're asking him to do are too big for him. And, you know, I'm not predicting that this guy is a starter.
No,
or
nothing like that.
Even on a lock to be on the 53-man roster. Maybe he's got to be a, you know, practice squad guy at first. But what I heard was, the comparison that I heard about him was Kelvin Beachum. You know, Kelvin Beachum was one of those seventh-round pick guys who I believe he's still in the league. I mean,
I'm looking it up right now. I think he's still playing. I think he's at a camp somewhere.
He's in a camp somewhere, but I think he's a little bit more than a camp body too. So this is, you know, Kelvin Beachum made a very nice career for himself. If Spencer Anderson can do the same thing, you know, good for him. This is a guy who also seems to have a lot of good things going for him, a lot of potential. They're working with him. He's shown improvement, and he's very versatile, which for an offensive lineman, I can't emphasize how valuable that is for a guy's chances to stick on a roster.
Yeah, Kelvin Beachum started all 17 games last year for the Cardinals, and he is back again with Arizona this year. It'll be his fourth season with the team. Not a bad career,
How many seasons?
This will be his 12th season in the NFL. He came in the league in 2012.
Right. Who would have predicted that? Certainly not me.
And Spencer Anderson would take that any day of the week to have a 12-year career after getting drafted in the seventh round. But one last thing I want to touch on, circling back to the edge rushers. You mentioned this briefly. You know, there's more depth at that position than you've seen in years past. And with the intensity that T.J. Watt plays at, and you just assume that, you know, there's going to be some bumps and bruises that Alex Highsmith suffers along the way as well, you need to call upon that depth and to have more quality at that position. And really, now that I'm talking out loud, they have more quality at almost every position when it comes to depth. But at outside linebacker, you know, no one wants to see T.J. Watt or Highsmith miss any time. The team is much worse without those guys. But I feel like if Watt were to go down for a game or two, I'm breathing a little bit more comfortably with a Golden and a Herbig than I had been in recent years.
Yeah, and, you know, I'm not insinuating that Marcus Golden is going to turn out to be, you know, a Melvin Ingram, you know, one of those disgruntled veteran guys that the Steelers brought in to be a backup, because I'm not. There has been no indication of that. I want to emphasize that that's not where I'm going with this. But they even have depth behind the guy they brought in for the depth, which is not a bad thing either, because if something were to happen and, you know, Marcus Golden didn't work out for some reason, they have someone else they can go to, you know, and that just hasn't been the case the previous couple of years. I mean, you had one guy, a third guy, and you were hoping that, first of all, you didn't need him much. And if you did, you know, he would be the guy. because you know I think that what we're going to see too is there are situations where both T.J. Watt and Alex Highsmith like to take, well, I won't say like to take breaks. The Steelers like to give them, you know, 5-7 plays off
right.
at different parts of a game. So now you also have two guys that you can use instead of just one who would have to play either side. And, you know, so again, it's there's just more options. More options are just so much better. They just are. I mean, as you said, you're hoping for the best injury wise, but it's always, you know, hope for the best, plan for the worst, as they say.
Well, Steelers are back on campus at St. Vincent for practice today at the usual time, 1:55 p.m. on Chuck Knoll Field. Labs and I will be back again tomorrow at 8 a.m. to recap today's practice. But that'll do it for today's training camp report. We're going in the locker room next. Wolf and Starks are taking over on Steelers Nation Radio.
Hey, guys. Back at the playground again, huh?
Yep. You know what this playground could use? A wine country.
Heck yeah, and some waves, so we could go surfing.
Oh, yeah. Ah, love that.
A redwood forest would be cool.
I'm in.
Ah, ski slopes.
Let's do it.
Can a girl go shopping?
Yeah, baby.
Wait, did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.